Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
Hello.
Here's John Williams.
Is this mic on? This is John. We're here until 3, Saturdays, 10 a.m. till 12 noon. Remember on social media, WGN King John. A lot of folks are playing along with us today on social media. On my Facebook page and at WGNradio.com, we post a news click, a daily web poll question, tons of comments. To the news click question today, I quipped in the news click yesterday, who won the Mueller testimony? Who won the Mueller testimony? You had five options, and the winner far and above them all was none of the above. Nobody won after Mueller testified. 55% of you said that. Number two, the American people, perhaps meaning the display was, you know, a free and democratic thing. We got the information. Everybody got to behave however they want, but we got to see it. And so 13% of you said the American people won yesterday, but you could have said the Democrats, and 13% of you said that. You could have said the Republicans, and 9% of you and I said that. How do you not score that as a victory for the Republicans yesterday? And then number five, Bob Mueller, and 9% of you said that yesterday. And then the comments just kept on coming. Susan said, I'll admit my retirement fund has won, but we've lost all our sense of human decency. No one is tolerant anymore. Well, that's an indictment of everybody, isn't it? The way the congressmen treated each other and the president treats people. Jane said, there's nothing to win here, but democracy lost, and so did America. I didn't set this question up to dump on the American parade, but you are. Robin said, Mueller said more than I thought he would. I think he did a good job. I think he is an honest man. Pete said, we all lost and we're still losing. Erica said, I put Bob Mueller down as the winner because he stuck to his report. Mary said, all I know is our country is in very big trouble right now. There's almost 100 that I'm looking at responses. Who won, you ask, John? The democratic process, Dwayne said, is still alive. And that's the thing. You know, if we really were under the sort of reign of a fascist or some sort of government that you and I didn't recognize, yesterday's hearing would not have even happened. At least we got that going for us. Jim said, I am of that group who is a conservative Republican, but a group that hates Trump. He's an embarrassment to the office. I cringe every time he says or tweets anything. To this day, I still can't believe that in 2016, most of my Republican brethren suddenly see more, it says here. We didn't print it out, but I think I know where he's going with that. Rick says, who won? That's like asking who won the Scopes trial. Well, that's way over my pay grade. The Scopes monkey trial, which was broadcast live exclusively on WGN Radio about 85 years ago, which was the great debate between creation and whatever the other one is. And on the anniversary of that, we actually went down to Kentucky. I'm trying to remember all of the details now, but producer Matt Bubala and I went down there, and we sort of covered live for WGN Radio the Scopes monkey trial. It was a different era when we had more money here. But it was funny because then they put on the Scopes monkey trial in the town where it took place. And they have live actors and characters, and they reenact it in the courtroom where the actual famous trial took place. And really, the broadcast of that was a marvel because radio had been around for a while, but you could only listen to local radio stations broadcasting local things. You couldn't hear the Rose Bowl yet. You couldn't hear Apollo yet. You couldn't hear the Scopes monkey trial if it was far, far away. So they rigged a series of phone lines from the courthouse to the local telephone lines and then from local telephone lines to other lines. And they literally were stringing wire all the way back to Chicago from down there. And then we broadcast it on WGN Radio to much of the country. And I got to play the part of the reporter who was covering it. There was a man from this radio station who was covering it back then. It was really a kind of a technological marvel, among other things. So I played his part in the little town play, and it was fun. It was a good idea. You can still comment on the news click or read them. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. By the way, Steve, you know how I was telling you the other day that when the cops are pulling you over, I get so nervous that I start to act guilty for crimes for which I'm not, would not be convicted?
Right. I remember that.
Do you have global entry?
I just made my appointment last night to go get it.
Are you able? Do you have an appointment date?
Yeah.
Holy cow, you have no idea how lucky you are. Some people wait months for that. How long between the time that you petitioned for a date did you actually get one?
Well, there's the application, then you get approved.
Right.
And then you have to schedule a interview.
So how...
I got approved really within a matter of days. It was shocking.
Okay, so Brenda and I were both doing the same thing at the same time. I got approved right away. Like within 3 weeks, I could make my appointment. Brenda is months out and still can't.
That's exactly the same with Sharon. Sharon took months. And I took days.
So what do you do then when one of you has global entry, which is a system by which you can get through customs in the airport much quicker? It's like TSA on steroids.
If you're the husband, you wait.
So I'm like, hey, I can get through TSA, the pre-check, and customs. I can be in the lounge in minutes.
So you just had your interview yesterday, right?
Yeah, I did.
And did they give you the card, give you approval right away?
I got approved within 24 hours online. The card will be in the mail, but with my global entry number, I can get in and out of the country, go through customs and TSA like that, like a snap, like a champ. Cost $100, lasts a few years.
No, you could if Brenda could too.
I know, but that's the thing. It's like, there's no point in me having this. Now, I'm not going to speak out of school. But you know how they sometimes randomly will give you the TSA pre-check and you didn't do anything to deserve it?
Right.
Recently, Brenda got that and I didn't.
Doesn't that make you feel secure that you can just show up and they'll let you bypass security?
I don't understand how they do that. I don't understand why they do that.
You don't bypass security, but it's...
But you don't have to take off your shoes, right, and you zip, you got a shorter line. I don't understand how that's working right now, because Brenda could have been a bad person. And whatever you would have otherwise caught, they weren't going to catch because she randomly was selected on that.
So what is it about our wives that held up their clearance for months?
I don't know. But when I was sitting down interviewing, so then when you finally go through the online process and then you finally get your interview date, you know, and you're sitting there, you've parted your hair on the left, you've buttoned up your shirt. It's like jury. It's like you're going to trial, you know, You want to look your best for this agent who's going to interview you to make sure you're not dangerous. And I finally got in there, and he started to ask me questions. And now I'm nervous because I don't think that the answers to the questions are what he's listening for. It's how do I answer the questions? Am I jittery? Am I looking nervous? Do I have something to hide? So I hand him my driver's license, and he says, "Is this your correct address?" And I paused, and then I said, well, what is the address on there? I literally said that, and he looked at me, and he said, have you moved recently? And I said, yeah, 2 years ago. But then for a moment, I thought, hey, you updated your license, right? Yeah, it's an Illinois license. It's not a Minnesota license.
Did you start to sweat a little bit?
Almost. And so then I finally gave him the answer, and he kind of looked at me. And then he said this, kind of a la Arlo Guthrie. He said, have you ever been arrested? And I paused again. I've never been arrested. I know I've never been arrested. What with me never having been arrested before, I happen to know that. But I paused. And he said, you paused. And I thought, I am going to jail. Not only am I not getting global entry, I'm going to be incarcerated.
I wish you'd videoed this.
Oh, I'm. You know, if they have it, there should be a training of how not to do it. But I said, I'm so trying to be honest. I'm so trying to like make sure that I respect and receive the full import of this question. So I'm sort of ingesting it mentally and emotionally. And then I said to him, no, I've never been arrested, but I've been pulled over before for speeding. He said, well, you don't get arrested for that. And I said, I know. And then he looks at me like, are you a moron? What are you doing here? Then he asked me another question about something equally simple, and again, I kind of fumbled the answer. And then he discovered that I was the talk show host, and that seemed to explain it all. Hey, Pete, this is John. Mr. McMurray, you're on WGN Radio.
John, I went through the entire process, and I was just like you. I was nervous, but they asked me the question, have you ever been arrested? And I said, absolutely not. And then they asked me again, have you ever been arrested? And I said, well, there was an incident back in 1987 in DeKalb, Illinois. And they said, yes. Oh, but I said, I did community service and everything's fine. And they said, no, it's still open. So I got denied. I had to call up the DeKalb circuit clerk, and they had to go in the files and find my court case.
Something happened when you were in college, huh?
Well, you know, you're drinking, have a good time, people get in fights.
I understand.
Cops face you, it happens.
Sure, sure. So then what happened?
I had to go home, and then I had to get the sheet from DeKalb. Fortunately, I didn't have to drive all the way to DeKalb. They faxed it to me. I made another appointment, and then I went in there again. Because if you get rejected two times, you're done.
Oh,
so I had
no.
to make sure I had all my ducks in a row, and then I passed.
And
I made it through.
When they asked you the question the second time, have you ever been arrested, you said, yes, but I'm cool.
Yes, everything's fine now. It's all good.
How long did it take you to get that second appointment, Pete?
It took me a little over a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. Did you go to O'Hare or did you do it downtown on Canal Street?
I went to O'Hare, and I've been trying to get my wife to do it, and she just doesn't want to drive out there.
You can do it on South Canal, right over by the post office.
I don't know. Can you?
Yeah, I did.
That would have been much easier.
I did it yesterday.
Okay.
That's where I did it. And it's very weird, though. It's so, like, we're the government. We work. You work for us. We don't work for you. And they
yep.
were nice people when I got
yep.
in there. But here's what happens. You take the elevator up to the sixth floor, and then you walk down this corridor, and there's a locked door and a sign. It says, Global Entry, ring the buzzer. You ring the buzzer, nobody shows up. There's no, there's nothing. And
of course.
And there's other people sitting there, and I'm like, did I do something wrong? And I go, what happens now? And they go, you sit. And so we all sat there for about a half an hour, and then finally a lady with a clipboard comes out and calls out some names, and you go in and you do the thing. It doesn't take long once you get in, but it's like it could be so much more accommodating. It could be so much more helpful the way they have it set up over there.
I agree 100%. It was like that at O'Hare, and they took you down this dark hallway, and you sat in this room, and they made you wait, and then the people came in. Of course, I got rejected the first time, but once you do get it, it's the greatest thing ever coming back from overseas.
So
it's
unbelievable. Is that where it pays dividends? Global Entry is when you come back rather than when you go out?
Yes.
Okay.
You skate right through O'Hare. There was hundreds of people in line.
Yeah.
When I came back from Mexico in February, we did it because we went to Ireland on Bertrand Travels. That's why I originally got it.
I'm going on a trip Monday, and I thought I'm going to get that Global Entry. Tragically, Brenda will not be able to go through the line with me as quickly. So.
Well, let's go back. So you had a great time in Ireland, right?
It was one of the greatest trips of my entire life.
Our trip via Steve Bertrand Travel to Ireland was the same. If you said line up the 15 trips we've done overseas now, the Ireland trip is in the top three.
They love Americans.
Yeah.
They embrace us.
And it's just so easy to do, and it's such a beautiful, different country.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that I'm not alone in that. And you weren't sweating the answers, or were you sweating the answers?
Oh, I was sweating the entire time. They make you feel, they put you on edge right away, and you're on your heels. And then, of course, the question, have you ever been arrested? I lied to them. And then they sent me away.
I'm glad you didn't get arrested. Did you feel that moment? Have you ever been arrested from Alice's Restaurant? that song was playing in my head. I got to go, but you're going to sit in this seat at least one or two of the days that I'm gone starting next week.
I will be in Monday and Tuesday for you, yes.
America will prosper for that. Thank you, Pete McMurray.
Have a great trip. See you, buddy.
That's our friend Pete. Yours, too. It's 121. Your friend Walter Jacobson watched yesterday's Mueller hearing, Mueller testimony before the Intel Committee, and he left a little note on my desk. The legendary newsman in Chicago, Walter Jacobson, left a little note on my desk. What did it say? Chicago's legendary newsman and WGN Radio's own Walter Jacobson is in the studio. Hi, Walter.
A little tired. Hi, John. A little tired from going over it and over and over it again, those hearings yesterday. You know, I don't think I can decide. I don't know who can really decide if they're thinking properly whether Trump won or lost. And I don't think it matters a whit. The details on the Mueller report, which didn't come out sufficiently to help make us make a decision, will be gone very soon. And the only thing that really matters, and I think this is a time in our country where things that matter are media-oriented. It's the media that will determine whether Donald Trump is reelected or not. That's what I think.
You left a note on my desk, and you said, I think it matters less what members of Congress are saying today about that. Maybe it's predictable. You're saying about the hearings than what the media is saying. You wrote the headlines, and the talking heads are now in charge of the electorate. So you think the press is sort of putting its opinion on this stuff too
much?
Oh,
my God, yes, 100%. I don't think purposely trying to make a point. I don't think purposely trying to determine who will be our next president. But the media is covering things that gets the media attention. And that's not details of a report.
Also, you said that you thought Mueller, you may have heard me yesterday, I said I thought Mueller performed poorly,
right.
But he seemed completely out of it. How did you view Bob Mueller's performance?
I guess I'm a minority of one. I think that he did exactly what he was expected to do, not what some hoped he would do, but what thinkers expected him to do, which was give as much detail as he could without giving an opinion on how he got to where he got when he wrote the report. Mueller is a man of great civility and honesty and aggressiveness, and he did exactly what he should have done, which is to keep his answers, this is in my opinion, to yes or no, correct or incorrect.
I've been carrying around his Wikipedia page for the last couple of days because it's a summary of his career.
Amazing.
You couldn't invent.
Right.
A better man for that job.
That's right.
Or for literally any job in which you would entrust judgment. If you said, we just want you to be intelligent and serve the people, that's all he's done his whole life, Bob Mueller.
Yeah, unfortunately, the members of Congress and the media wanted him to do more or less than that.
Well, I did want him to. Listen to this. John, give Mueller a break, says this texter. He's not a TV actor that gives brilliantly articulated, rehearsed answers. Somebody else said, hey, John, he's 74. Cut him some slack. And this one says, John, I think you're being too hard on Mueller. He is basically saying, listen, all you idiots. Of course, he's guilty, but we can't indict a sitting president. All fair and good. Point well taken. I'm just saying that I think he would have helped his case, and I think he would have helped all of us. If I had my cake and I could eat it too, if I had the context of whatever he wanted to deliver, and if he was able to deliver it with greater command. He fumbled. He seemed to lose his way. I was shocked, honestly. But maybe that's not so important. How did he perform on TV yesterday, as was what's in the report?
Yeah, I think that's right. It's not that important. But more than that, or at least equal to that, was he didn't, in my view, say something that would have hurt him and the country and the people who worked with him to get the report together. That's not the purpose of what he did.
Kind of the flip of James Comey, right? Because Comey
right.
was saying something, and then he had to correct something, and then he'd come back and say something else. This is the opposite of that, for
That's
what
right.
it's worth.
That's right.
Nice to hear your voice, Walter.
Nice to hear yours.
Walter Jacobson, you hear on Thursday mornings on the Steve Cochran Show on WGN Radio. He's kind enough to share some of his wisdom on this show. Lots of text to the show today. John, please continue speaking about Russian collusion on a daily basis. Continue the myth. Interview Luke Harding, author of the New York Times bestseller Collusion. LOL, says 815. 815, I don't know that book. But if you and I are disagreeing about whether or not the Russians interfered on the election, then we'll just have to disagree on that. Did the Trump administration collude with the Russians? No, I don't think they did. I think they tried. 630 says, I thought Mueller looked like he couldn't hear everyone's comments or questions. 708, John, is Mueller the judge and jury? Does he have position to dispense exoneration? This did nothing to prove guilt or innocence. And 847 said, John, because they have the loudest voices, the Republicans, it does not make them the winner. Just stay with the facts that were answered. Okay, lots of opinions on that. Oh, and by the way, thanks for finishing my thought. Somebody said, John, Scopes monkey trial, creation versus evolution. But that was decided. These days. It's just a different experience, and I think I'm more distracted, hands-free or otherwise, when I'm talking on the phone to my dad.
Look, you're a distracted driver when you turn the car on.
I love the colors yellow and green. I like talk radio when they talk about things. Let's talk about things.
I shouldn't be on our nation's highways. I mean, you've already got a problem.
Can we just say that I asked you to come in early for crosstalk today, and so I look up and hear you're sitting there 12 minutes before the show ends.
Which,
John, what are you doing?
By some books, is a little early. So then I went back to my office and forgot that Bennett said to come in early. You should have taken me while you had me.
Again, you got it, and you have a license.
And I vote in elections.
Right.
I like talk radios when they talk about things. Let's talk about things. Gentle friend, what a time for men. Table tennis in a talk of house.
Yeah, maybe you should have to pass some sort of competency test to vote. That's un-American. That's fundamentally un-American, but I get the point. Somebody texted to me yesterday about that and said, no, there should be one. There should be a competency test to be president or a member of Congress. I think a lot of us were disappointed with just about everything we saw on TV yesterday. 309 texted in. I'm just continuing to filter through the show with some of your reactions to what happened on TV 24 hours ago. In 309, that's Central Illinois, said the only person at the hearing interested in the truth yesterday was Mueller. Think about that. That's a good take. 630, John, do you know who really fumbled at the hearing? The Department of Justice and their memo that says that the president cannot be indicted. That's BS. You know, the thing that amazes me is that how everybody is adhering to that as though it's written in the Constitution or that it's the law.
You know,
it is not.
Mueller said in his 9-minute speech a month ago that he referred to it as unconstitutional. He said it would be unconstitutional to do it. Now, it's an opinion, but I'd never heard that phrase before. Or that word to describe it.
Well, I just said it's not in the Constitution and it's not the law. Maybe you'll prove me wrong on that, but my belief is that that's just an interpretation.
Well, I think it is. I mean, and think of this, how wrong it is, or how there's a hitch in the giddy-up, sort of, and throw out Donald Trump or any of this. This is a made-up president, right?
Yeah.
So imagine there's a president who breaks the law in order to get elected, and because he broke that law, he gets elected. Once he's elected, he can't be convicted for breaking the law that got him elected.
Not until his term is up. And he might get reelected, by the way. Listen, there's a book called The Fifth Estate that's out now. Go ahead, Steve. I cut you off.
Well, I was just going to say, that seems to be like we need a fix for that. I mean, right? I mean,
I guess we do. But you know, I think it's hard to get your head around the notion as it was intended. Like, why do we give the president a mulligan on laws that you or I would otherwise suffer for?
I think maybe we need the equivalent of a FISA court or a panel of judges,
right,
that you could go before
and say, does the president get a pass on this?
Here's the evidence we have. Do we have your approval to be sort of like a grand jury, but made up of appellate, you know, judges somehow?
I'm just trying to think of an instance where you would lose the services of the president who is duly elected because he broke the law. And that is the thrust of this. Say the president was a drunk driver and did it enough that he was finally put in jail. And in jail, you can't really be an effective president. Or something else that would get you in jail for a while, right? And the reason that we have this is because you have to ask yourself, what's the greater good? Millions of people, once every 4 years, go to elect a president. And this is the person they want to govern their lives. And if that person screws up and drunk drives and gets in jail, should that one indiscretion by that individual cancel the will of hundreds of millions of people? And because of that conflict of interest, we decide as a nation that the president can break the law and we won't prosecute him. We won't jail him until after the term is up to serve the greater good. That's the reason you have that.
I think there's another reason, though, John. It also has to do with the defending himself or herself. The time it would take away from the job to prepare a defense, go to court, things like that. I mean, I think that's part
of it. You're absolutely right. That's indeed part of it, Steve. We talked to the guy that wrote the book on this show for 8 minutes. But it's a really good book, and let me get you the title and author of that before I'm done here. If you're wondering why we have that, there's a real good book along these lines. And now I'm talking too long. Yay, Walter Jacobson. Never thought Mueller was trying to keep the facts. He was just doing his job. 630 said, John, on The View this morning, Whoopi Goldberg said that the Mueller performed as he intended to. Remember, he didn't want to be there. That's an interesting point, right? Like, maybe that's naturally how he would appear, or maybe he sure wasn't trying to fix it because he didn't want to give him anything anyway.
I said during the Mincing Rascals that he was an 8-year-old told that he had to play with his 3-year-old cousins.
And he just didn't want to do it.
And that's what it is. Okay, I'll be here. I'll do. Okay, Mom, I know we're playing Monopoly. I get it.
True.
And then when it was over, he just left.
He was answering questions like a whack-a-mole game. True. Yes. No. Not going to answer that. Not going to go there. Boom, 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 boom.
Dad, I'm playing with them.
Boom. True. And I'm telling you, you need to play around with that phrase that he also sort of coined yesterday, and that is, I take your question. Anna DeVlantis mentioned that during Crosstalk yesterday. She said she thought the grooviest line out of the whole thing was, I take your question. Do you have the I take your question? Hey, Ashley, you do, right? Play the before. We're leaving this topic after we just let this point get made.
He's not corruptly acting in order to see that justice is done. What he's doing is not obstructing justice. He is pursuing justice. And the fact that you ran it out 2 years means you perpetuated injustice.
I take your question. Time has expired. The witness may answer the question.
I take your question.
So that guy goes on this rant about how Donald Trump was preserving justice.
I think that was Louis Gohmert from Texas.
He just went on a tear. And the guy was really good, right? I mean, that guy was Hollywood, right? And then there's Jimmy Stewart, and he just goes, I take your question. Now, does I take your question mean points scored, I'll give you that one? Or does it mean go pound sand, I disagree with you, I take your question? And the way the internet, Twitter, is interpreting it today is that I take your question is his rebut, that's him dismissing what the congressman is saying. At the time, I thought that was him acquiescing. You keep score at home. I think today is the day that Apollo 11 landed.
Old news.
Splashdown.
So much has happened since then.
You know, really, what a shame, right? What a shame. Vula Saradakis is that space scientist over at the Museum of Science and Industry who was kind enough to join us Saturday on the anniversary of man's first step, and before that when man lifted off for the moon. So let's just complete the mission here, Vula. This is John. You're back on WGN. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Where are you? Are you on speaker?
I am.
I will not tolerate a speakerphone. We need more current technology.
Okay. How's that?
You sound so much better, Vula.
Okay, great.
So, you know, I was thinking about the splashdown, which was today, right?
It was actually yesterday.
Yesterday, after our show, so this is maybe the closest opportunity for us, or one of them. I'm trying to remember when Apollo 11 landed that way, when it splashed down.
Mm-hmm.
Were we able to see it in the sky, like we were able to track the space shuttle when it landed? Did everybody see it, and did we have live television of that as well?
I don't think that there was live television of the actual splashdown, although for sure the military planes and probably the technology that they had on the USS Hornet was tracking it once it cleared the atmosphere. And as it turns out, you know, they had been to the moon and they walked on the moon, but there were still challenges. The challenges were far from over. And one of the challenges in splashdown was that there were thunderstorms bearing down on Columbia splashdown location. So there were a few things there that might have made tracking it a little bit more of a challenge. But in the end, they just used their module like a wing to re-enter the atmosphere like they needed to and landed only a couple of miles off the target zone. But everything was safe, and they did do some tracking, but it would have been mostly like the military doing that in that time period.
And I guess previous Apollo missions had worked out the friction, and does the thing get too hot? Can they survive the heat of the thing? I mean, that's kind of a interesting part of the engineering, I guess, of the mission, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. They had prepared for everything, you know, every step of the way was a challenge. So once they got off the moon, they had to get off the moon, then they had to redock with the command and service module, take the 3 days to travel safely back to the Earth, and then, like you just said, survive that blazing heat of reentry and splashdown. And Columbia was, they had prepared for every eventuality, and Columbia was designed to, if necessary, fly in like a wing and reenter at a certain angle in the atmosphere so that they could stretch out their landing zone if necessary. And they did have to do just that because of those thunderstorms. Although in the end, it only was about 2 miles away from the intended landing point. And they splashed down. It was about 900 miles southwest of Hawaii in the Pacific Ocean.
It's funny, I don't remember that part of it, but, you know, we were all familiar, I think, with the idea that the landing spot on the moon wasn't ideal and they had to manually fix that. But then coming back, they had to sort of change course at the last minute, too, huh?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And Columbia, the command module, which was the only part of the whole mission to return back to the Earth, was in fact designed to do just that in case of things like, you know, bad weather or whatever. So, and it turned out to be a success in the end. They had to tweak and they had to do course corrections, but the technology was firmly in place to get them back safely.
I also we were watching First Man the other night, the movie that I thought so well captured what probably it was like in there. And one of the things that I think gets a little lost as we recollect Apollo 11 this week and last was after they blast off from the moon, they have to redock with the command module up there. And those are moving objects, you know, at different heights, different speeds, different orientations. Mm-hmm. And it's like that's... You don't just, like, fly it over like you drive your car. It had to be certain bursts of the rocket engines at certain times, and it oriented itself. Mm-hmm. And then they turn around, and you go, boy, I hope you're there. And they turn around, and there he is.
Yeah, absolutely. And if, you know, whenever you look at this, the lunar module itself, you always wonder how in the world they did this. It didn't really look like a spaceship. And some astronauts even called it the bug because it had these, you know, crazy spider legs and that, yeah, all that metallic foil to protect it from the heat. But it was an unusual design because it was meant, like you said, to land and launch from the moon. And it served its purpose in the end. It was light, it was utilitarian, it was functional, and it got the job done.
Vula, so I'll let you go, but what recollecting over the last 2 weeks over the Apollo 11 mission, what was the most impressive thing for you, or what's the big takeaway for you?
I was in elementary school, I think, when I first saw the launch, not live, but, you know, filmed. And I think it was just such an inspiration for me. One of the reasons I do what I do now, to watch that massive Saturn V rocket just launch in slow motion from one of those cameras they put on the gantries. I mean, it's just amazing. And I think that's really one of the takeaways in all of this, not just for me, is that it demonstrated what we could accomplish. And it was very inspirational, but I think it continues to inspire the next generation.
Yeah, I hope so. And then I guess the question is, to what end? Like, if we're going to be inspired by that, and we should, what do we do with that? Does that mean we go to the moon or Mars, or maybe we don't do that, but we show what we can all do if we work together, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's always difficult to predict the future, of course, but this whole idea of exploration and the desire to know what's just around the corner, or even our place in the universe, has always been an innate part of who we are. And I think that was a big part of why we went to the moon in the first place.
Vula Sarodakis is over at the Museum of Science and Industry. You still got that model, the actual... what is it? The Eagle?
The trainer.
The trainer,
yes,
that they trained on.
The lunar module trainer.
Yeah, is over at the Museum of Science and Industry, where they have air conditioning on a warm day. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a pleasant day, if you are looking for something to do this summer with the family, how can you not want to go actually look inside what it was like for those astronauts this year? This is the place to be. All right, Vula, nice to talk to you.
Yes, thank you so much.
Vula Sarodakis is over at MSI. It's 1:53 on WGN. More texts pouring into our little radio show today. A few highlights from them. Oh, and then also Honor Flight, Chicago. You know about Honor Flight, right, Steve? A friend of mine.
Oh, yeah.
Is, so what Honor Flight is that's where they take men and women who have served, and they take them to Washington, D.C., and they give them the sort of honor that maybe they didn't have. Maybe they did, but let's honor them one more time. Vietnam veterans are just now being given the opportunity to take honor flights. And a friend of mine is, in fact, going to be one of the very first. Let's just tell that part of the story about the respect the Vietnam vets are finally getting.
But you know, you're talking about Bob Mueller this week and his performance and his age and all of that. He was a Vietnam veteran. I mean, they're older Americans now.
Yeah, no kidding. No, I'm glad we're going to do this. We'll talk to those folks a little after 2 here on GM.
Belongs to everyone. The best things in life are free.
Speaking of moon launches, you gotta
stars belong.
Find a way to shoehorn this into the broadcast from Mad Men.
They gleam there for you and me.
I don't know if you remember this, but it was bizarre.
Flowers in spring, the robins that sing, the sunbeams that shine.
One of their partners, Bert, passed away, and then he appeared to Don, and everybody was dancing in this musical tribute.
The best things in life are free.
He died around the time of one of the Apollo launches in the movie and or on the TV show, and then they did a medley. It was the strangest, most wonderful thing from an episode of Mad Men. By the way, that First Man, Steve, do you know that movie? Lauren, have you watched?
Which movie?
First Man.
No.
I haven't seen it yet.
It came out, I think, in 2018. And I just watched
with Ryan Gosling, right?
Yes, and Claire Foy as Neil Armstrong's wife. And it's not a love story. I mean, it just feels so real. And when they're in that spaceship and they're launching off, you know, we all see it from the outside, like, wow, a rocket going into the air, how cool. You have no idea how terrifying it is inside until you watch that movie, among other things, First Man. And not to terrify you, but okay, to terrify you, an asteroid passed between us and the moon on Wednesday. Did you know that? You didn't see it. It went right by. But an asteroid passed between us and our moon on Wednesday that was 393 feet across. Think of the damage that would have done. I thought that was about the size of the one that killed the dinosaurs. You guys are telling me no, it was miles across. But I'll bet you an asteroid 393 feet slamming into Earth would have wiped out cities. That would have changed climate. And it came between us and the moon.
Maybe that's the climate solution.
What's that, Steve?
Well, would it make it better or worse? It's not guaranteed.
It would throw up a bunch of stuff in the atmosphere and then would cool us off, right? So maybe we could get one of those.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Hi, it's me. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, weekdays till 3 and Saturdays 10 to noon.
Lord have mercy.
Taking this Saturday off. Next week I'm going to be traveling. We will be with our good friends at Kelly Cruises and 150 WGN listeners in Paris for a couple of nights. And then after that we'll take a riverboat up the Seine to Normandy. We'll spend a couple of days there on this, the 75th anniversary of D-Day. It's come and passed this summer, but it's that year, and so we're going to, many of us for the first time, I presume most of us for the first time, go to Utah and Omaha. We'll visit the cemeteries. We'll spend a couple of days there, and then we'll sally on back down the Seine. And I'm really looking forward to that. The high temperature today in Paris, anyone? Bueller? Lovely Europe in the summer? 107.
Over 100, yeah.
107. 107. You know, like 99... 100, 101, 108 shouldn't be that much scarier. Actually, at one point, they were saying that today or yesterday it was going to be 109.
What's the humidity like?
Low.
So it's like a Vegas?
I don't know, but there's something terrifying to me about 109 in France, or for that matter, Chicago, where the humidity would be higher, right? I mean, it's not a desert. So I don't know how humid it can be when it gets that high. But
well, as long as humidity is low, it doesn't feel as hot, but that doesn't really mean you're not going to feel hot at all.
You will notice 108. And
yes.
I think it's a lot more than 101. Like, I've done 101. I've been to 102. I've been to 103 in Chicago. Never been to 108. Don't want to be. And the idea that you'd be there in a place that does not feature a lot of air conditioning or ice cubes, I really feel for the people whose grand trip to France is finally today, and it's 107 or 108 degrees there. The temperature is supposed to fall in the next couple of days, and when we get out there, it should be nice. I know you don't care, but I do, and 150 of our listeners do. Speaking of travel, so there's this thing called Honor Flight, right? And you've probably heard a little bit about it. Honor Flight is that thing where they take veterans and they give them, for some of them, the thrill of their lives. Literally, I've talked to some men particularly, although women are able to participate in this too, but men who will tell me that whatever they did in Korea, say, a guy I was just talking to the other day, when he talks about the Honor Flight that he was on a few years ago, it brings him to tears. And his wife is sitting there watching him tell the story, and she knows how this is going to go. She'll stand there and he'll start to get going on it. And the more he talks about it and the more people did for him, the more round up he gets. And then she just kind of looks at me like, here it comes. And then the faucet comes on. And I think what really makes him so emotional is sort of the connection he's having to these other people. I mean, they were honoring him, but he's telling you about the people that were doing the things. It's just the nicest story or series of stories, right? Doug Meffley's on a phone line from Honor Flight Chicago to tell us a little bit more about this organization. Hey, Doug, it's John. You're on the air. How are you?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks for having me.
What's your connection with Honor Flight?
So I'm one of the co-directors here at Honor Flight Chicago. We had a founder and a co-founder and CEO, Mary Pettinato, who built this from the ground up in 2008. She stepped away in November, and myself and Edna Ho are now leading the ship.
She has big shoes for you to fill. She was energetic. She was enthusiastic. She really got the job done, didn't she?
She really did. That's why it's taken two of us to kind of step into her place.
I've only heard good things about you from a friend of mine who's a Vietnam vet and is himself going to finally be able to make the Honor Flight to Washington, D.C. But just tell me about what you all do generally first. What's an Honor Flight?
Absolutely. So Honor Flight Chicago was founded with the mission to take our World War II heroes to their brand new memorial in Washington, D.C., which took 60 years to build, and by the time it was built, so many of them weren't able to get there on their own. And they didn't hear the words thank you when they came home. So this trip was built around saying thank you for their service so that they could visit their memorial. And the impact that we saw that it had on these World War II veterans was so profound that we quickly expanded it to include our Korean War veterans. And now this year, we're able to expand it to include our Vietnam War veterans as well. And we're so excited to be able to do that.
I understand why, given the age of the individuals, you should start with World War II and work your way down. But I'm a little surprised to hear you say the World War II veterans felt that something like that was necessary. Surely their experience was different than the Vietnam veterans and maybe even the Korean guys.
You're exactly right. So when World War II came back, it was business as usual. Many of them came home, went to their beds, and got up and went to work the next day. There wasn't a lot of fanfare with them, which when you compare it to what the Vietnam veterans went through and what we hear from our Vietnam veterans and just the animosity that they faced upon return, not being able to wear their uniforms in public. We had one veteran who went on our flight in June who talked about the very first person he saw getting off the plane at O'Hare told him to go right to the bathroom and change into your civvies. There are people waiting for you in the terminal. And that's what he did. So it was a totally different type of experience coming home from them. And it's a day not only for the Vietnam vets to say thank you, but for them to say welcome home.
So while it might not have been the celebration that I thought it would have been for World War II vets, they were welcomed back, but then they had a job to do. They've got to go back to work and support their families. Vietnam veterans obviously had a much different experience. Not only did they need to try and find work, but they were almost discriminated against. People didn't like them.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. And that's what we're attempting to correct here with this trip and the experience that we give them of taking them to their memorial, and it brings back memories for them that aren't the most positive, but to do so within the context of a trip that's built around love and thanks and inspiration, it makes a big difference. And we've only had two flights now with Vietnam veterans included on them, but just what we're hearing back has been life-changing for them, and we can't wait to keep going with it.
What is it like? What do you do? They get to O'Hare early in the morning or midway early in the morning, right?
Exactly. So it's a very early day. We have them there at 4 a.m. And then when the plane takes off, and then Southwest and Midway have been amazing partners for us, we head to Washington, D.C. We see five of their memorials along the way throughout the day in D.C. And then on the flight home, it's a one-day trip. They're back here in Chicago before 9 p.m. But throughout the day, there are surprises and ceremonies and just different little things to show them how much they're appreciated.
Yeah. And they don't get to do a thing. I mean, my friend was telling me, I said, well, I'll walk over there. And they say, no, sir, we have a chair. We're going to push you. He says, I can walk. They says, it'd be nicer if we pushed you. Let us extend that courtesy to you. And he said, okay. And off he went, you know.
That's exactly right. We have some veterans who insist on walking, and if they insist on walking, well, it's their day.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're welcome to, but we try to take care of every need they could possibly have, so they have no worries at all on this trip.
We're talking about Honor Flight Chicago. Are there Honor Flights like this throughout the country? Do they have Honor Flight Cincinnati?
They do. So there are 130 different hubs around the country that are all kind of under the umbrella of Honor Flight Network. So every hub does things a little bit differently. Some hubs take multi-day trips. Our trip is a one-day trip. But it's all built around the same thing of saying thank you to our veterans. We're really proud at Honor Flight Chicago to be the biggest hub in the country. We've flown the most veterans. We've now honored over 8,400 veterans from World War II, the Korean War, and the Vietnam War. And we're going to keep going as our wait list continues to grow. We have over 2,400 Vietnam veterans on our wait list right now.
Wow.
Waiting for their day of honor.
Wow. Is there an expense to them or their families?
There is not. So it is a completely free trip for our veterans. We do have family guardians that sometimes are able to travel along with our veterans. And there's a slight cost to them, but it is a completely free day for our veterans.
Yeah. Friend, so I was telling the story about this Korean vet, and his wife cuts hair, and we were all in the shop. And then another woman, who just happened to be a customer, said that her sister works for one of the airlines, and her job is to travel on the honor flights. So she's always interacting with these guys and just has such heartwarming stories to tell. And I was also glad to hear that the airlines are sort of contributing to this, too.
Yeah, they have been great, Southwest in particular. Every time we get on one of our flights and we charter with them, the pilots are always veterans themselves. We have a lot of veterans among the flight attendants, and they have stories and the camaraderie that they share with the veterans. It just adds another special layer to the day.
So then you just started. You've taken two groups of Vietnam vets. Is that correct?
So we call it kind of our three-generation flight. We still have World War II and Korean War veterans, and as soon as we get applications from them because of age, we put them on the next available flight. But we've just begun with our Vietnam veterans, and June was our first that had all three generations on it.
Particularly since the Vietnam veterans aren't getting any younger, and some of them are yet suffering from Agent Orange or some of the ill effects of that war, and so they're not having the normal lifespan that a person in their age group would otherwise have.
That's exactly right. We, despite the younger age, we still see some of the health challenges that we see among our World War II veteran population. And so in that way, we're kind of built to be able to take them on these trips because we have that experience with our older demographic that needs a wheelchair, maybe needs assistance to their seat, and we can take care of that, and we're proud to take care of that.
So then they land in D.C., you get on a bus, you go to where the monuments are. Do the Korean guys go there and the World War II guys go there and the Vietnam guys go there?
So we travel as a group, and all of our veterans visit all of the memorials. And there's a brotherhood among all of them.
Yeah.
We have a special ceremony at the World War II Memorial that honors all of our veterans from all of our wars that are with us, and especially those of their comrades who didn't come home. And it's special because there are a lot of father-son combinations where the fathers fought in World War II and the sons fought in Vietnam. And so visiting the World War II Memorial has a special significance for them as well.
Doug Meffley's on the line. He's one of the people that runs Honor Flight Chicago, where they do this, where they take veterans and they give them sort of a grand thank you from America, although the experience would be different for all of them. You alluded to one of the stories from a Vietnam guy. Can you share another one with us or tell me what some of the Vietnam vets tell you all?
Absolutely. So on our last flight, we had a combat medic by the name of Bob Misevich, who earned 3 Bronze Stars during his service, just a decorated hero. And he came to the wall with a specific mission. There were 3 soldiers that he had treated in the field that he didn't know what had happened to them. And so he went and looked on the wall, and unfortunately, he found all 3 of their names on the wall. And instead of it being a sad situation for him and realizing that those soldiers he treated didn't make it, he said that it was 52 years he'd been waiting for this closure, and he finally got it. And the fact that he got it surrounded by his fellow veterans and by all of our volunteers who were just showering them all in love made him so proud of his service and what he did. It's not an atypical story from our first couple of flights.
Such a simple lesson, isn't it? Just be nice to people, tell them you love them, shower them with affection, and pat them on the back for a job well done, even when it was a job nobody wanted to do. Just do that, and it works, I'm guessing.
It works. It works. We had another veteran who was on our flight a couple of weeks ago. He talked about if he, and as a Vietnam veteran, and his brethren had received 1/1,000th of the treatment that they got on their honor flight. He believes that the mental illness and the homelessness and all of the issues that population, that it wouldn't be there. And we firmly believe that as well.
Yeah. What can we do to help you guys, Doug?
Well, first and foremost, we want to thank all the veterans that we possibly can. So if you have a Vietnam veteran in your life, Korean War veteran, World War II veteran, send them to honorflightchicago.org or go there yourself. You can get an application and give it to them. We would love to fly them for sure. And then we're always looking for volunteers. We have an exceptional volunteer corps, almost 1,000 active volunteers between here in Chicago and Washington, D.C., who help us out. We're always looking for more volunteers to honor these heroes as well. And then funding, it takes a lot of money to send these heroes to Washington, D.C., and we fly as often as we're able to, and so any connections that we can get there is always appreciated.
Lots of texts, by the way. John, Honor Flight is amazing. One of my best memories as the daughter of a vet. My dad was so touched by the trip. My husband went with him. My dad passed on 8 months later. And I'm sure you hear stories like that, too, where it's sort of a nice punctuation point at the end of a life of service, right?
It is. It's most often cited as the best day of their life outside of their wedding or the birth of their children. And so often, once a veteran passes, we get calls from the family who want to thank everyone connected because that's all the veteran has been talking about since his trip.
Well, there's a buddy of mine named Jim Zwett. Do you know Jim?
I know Jim.
You can't not know Jim if you've ever met Jim. And Jim Zwett, for those of you who don't know his story, I've told it many times, I won't hear, but just Google Mary Schmick, the famous Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Tribune, Schmick, S-C-H-M-I-C-H, Mary Schmick, and Jim Zwett. She's written a couple of times about him, but the first article she wrote about him was one of the 10 articles that she turned in for her application for the Pulitzer Prize, and she won it. And I think Jim thinks that he won it, too. But because it's such a profound story told so very well about this man's service, both in combat and afterwards. He's lived a life of that. Jim is in ill health right now, and he's struggling. And he's going to be on one of your planes now. And I'm so happy for him. Right after the 1st of August, he's going to be flying out with you guys. I think that's going to be the merriest, loudest, raucousest a flight that you've had in a long time, because he's a great spirit, isn't he?
He really is. We cannot wait to have him on our plane.
His name is Jim Zwett, and of course, all of them deserve. So my best to Jim and them, and you too. If we can help you down the road, Doug, you know how to reach us. Let's talk about it more on the radio.
We do. Thank you so much, John.
Doug Mefley is with Honor Flight Chicago. I recognize this voice. This is hilarious.
I'm gonna go and burn my afternoon. After effortless sleep defectiveness.
Okay, you don't even know who that is, but when I tell you who it is, you're going to go, oh yeah, I recognize that voice. Lauren Lapp, did he recognize the voice?
I feel like it sounds familiar, but I don't know for sure.
Okay, Ashley.
All right, so who we are listening to right now is actually, it's a band called Work in Progress. And believe it or not, it is Gaten Matarazzo, who plays Dustin on Stranger Things. It is his band, and that is him singing.
No way! He sounds so old. Maybe easier to close my bedroom door.
But what good is that to me? Right, right. Now you can see it, right?
Yes.
Or hear it.
He's a very talented singer, but I gotta say, that little song part of the third season was kind of cheesy.
Well, I thought he has some sort of affected speech. I'm surprised that he's a known singer because he kind of talks funny. That's pretty good. So when and where?
So they are actually coming to Chicago August 10th, so you have some time to get some tickets. I was eager. I'm really excited to see them. But they're going to be here at 6 p.m. It's a Saturday at Subterranean, which is located at 2011 West North Avenue. And it's him and his band. There's like six kids in the band. And they range from ages, like he's 16, and I believe the youngest one is either 15, and then the oldest one is 21. So
when they're not singing, do they solve mysteries in each town where they go? Or no, that would be the TV show.
I thought you chose it because the opening lyric was about making friends.
Well, that's what we're about to do, Steve Bertrand. By the way, it's 2:39 on WGN. So do we have three sound clips that I want to play, too? We're set to go on those as well, right? Oh, and just one other quick note. Earlier I was talking about a book. We were asking about how it is that there's even this notion that the president can't be convicted of crimes until at least he's out of office. He gets very contentious about that. There was a disagreement about what Bob Mueller was talking about under testimony when he was testifying yesterday. And I said there's a book that really describes well, I think, this part of our Constitution, or at least the interpretation of it. And the book that I was thinking of is The Fifth Risk by Michael Lewis. I said it was The Fifth Something. It's The Fifth Risk by Michael Lewis. But that's not the book, because Michael Lewis's Fifth Risk is about all of the departments of government and how the transition went from the Obama administration to the current administration and how ready they were or were not to run America, as it were. It's a really good book. It's not very long. It's just a couple hundred pages.
It started as a magazine article.
Yes, it did. Yeah. I think it was it The Atlantic or something like that. He wrote this piece and then they made it into a book. The book I'm thinking of, the name escapes me, but I promise you I'm going to talk about it tomorrow because I want to kind of put a point to that, how it is that the president can't be prosecuted. Bob Mueller feels that. 241. I know what Steve was alluding to, though, when he said we ought to make friends as well. This is the new mayor of Chicago caught on a hot mic at the city council meeting.
It's now back again. This is FOP Clown.
FOP Clown, she said, referring to a vice president with the Fraternal Order of Police in Chicago. She was asked about it a little later on, and this is what she said.
I think I said I shouldn't have said that out loud.
She had a wry smile on her face. I think I said I shouldn't have said that out loud, meaning I shouldn't have said it, or I shouldn't have said it so that you all could hear it. And then one other quote from Lori Lightfoot.
It was not appropriate for me to say that out loud.
So I don't think that's the apology that some people thought she should give, and maybe she shouldn't give one at all. But she was talking about a vice president for the Fraternal Order of Police, and he's in our studio now, Patrick Murray. Hi, Patrick. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.
Were you there when she said that?
I was there, but I could not hear what she said because it was so softly said.
I see. Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't pronounced, but if you play it back, by golly, you can hear it. So what did you think when you heard that she said that about you?
Well, I thought she was way out of line. I think that she's overstepped her bounds as the mayor, making a personal comment about me in public.
So tell me a little bit about your background. How long have you been on the force?
I spent 29 years on a job. I started out in Englewood. I worked in the 9th District. I've worked all over. Actually worked in City Hall for about 8 years.
In City Hall, in what capacity? Oh, as a police officer, but
as a police officer assigned to the second floor. I was in charge of the city council when they had council meetings.
I see. Now you're a vice president with the Fraternal Order of Police. So are you still on the force, or do you give up your badge and work for the union?
No, when you become elected, you take a leave of absence, basically, and but I recently was forced off the job in March, so I'm recently retired.
So you neither work for the union nor the police now?
Yes, I work specifically for, no, I work for the FOP. That's exactly who I work for.
So you're no longer on the force, you work for the FOP.
Correct.
Yeah. So you're not on leave, you're
right.
No longer work for the police department in the city of Chicago. Well, what's the genesis of the mayor's ire at you?
Well, she, unbeknownst to us, she put together this 10 transition committees to reform Chicago. She went all over the country. She got input from everyone around the country. Other, you know, out to Philadelphia, went all over. Father Flager, Jamal Green. She got input. She put the transition committees together, but she failed to ask anyone inside the FOP for our input, and she didn't invite us to these meetings.
Well, she said, I'm all for any conversation you want to have. If you want to do something that reforms the police department, I'm here. Do you need a red carpet for an invitation? What are you guys waiting for?
Well, she wants to reform the police department in her image. She wants to take these contracts that we've got, or contractual rights that we've accrued because of contract negotiations over the last several years. And what she's trying to do is make this job more and more difficult. It's obvious what happened in New York, that the respect that people have for police officers across this country is actually gone completely out the window.
Are your views those of, I mean, are you speaking as an individual, or are you speaking on behalf of the police officers of the city of Chicago?
Oh, I think I speak for the majority of police officers in the city.
Well, in your position you do. So even if some of them might disagree, this is the way it is with any union, but this is the voice of the police of Chicago.
Yes, this is. I am elected first vice president of the FOP.
What is the biggest problem? I mean, I get what you're saying, and I don't think anybody likes reform when somebody else is reforming them. But what is the biggest problem you have with the reforms that the mayor wants to impose?
Well, she wants to take away our ability basically to defend ourselves. She wants to change this 24-hour rule for shootings.
What's the 24-hour rule?
Well, she wants you to be able to, well, she wants, what she wants to do is you to be able to make a statement within 24 hours. And, you know, when an officer is involved in a shooting, it's very traumatic. He needs to sit down and think about what happened to kind of internalize what happened so he's able to give a fair statement.
I wonder if on the heels of Laquan McDonald, it's best that we get to the cops right away with the statement rather than giving them an opportunity to line their stories up.
Well, you know what? One of the things about, you could stand next to somebody when something happens and see something completely different. What we want to do is we want to give correct statements. And it's very hard when something happens that quick and that traumatic to give an accurate statement sometimes. It's not about lying. It's about giving the right statement.
Does some of this have to do with the mayor saying that you guys shouldn't take vacations on the 4th of July because, was it the 4th of July, the holiday that lined up with?
She's doing it on all of the major
holidays.
Weekends.
Yeah.
She thinks that she throws police officers in certain areas. It's going to decrease crime. I just think that, you know, you got officers at work all the time. They're overworked. We haven't a contract in 2 years. These guys are struggling to make ends meet. They make, you know, plan to go on vacations and do stuff with their families, and then at the last minute they're canceled. So it puts a lot of stress on their family life.
Well, she didn't say that no cop could be on vacation that weekend, right? She was saying that there were some lieutenants, there were some supervisors who should not be taking vacation.
Well, you know, they have a 15% rule where basically they say you can't have less than 15%, well, no more than 15% of police officers could have the time off.
I see.
But, you know, you have things planned. You're going away for the 4th of July. You're planning to go places with your family, and all of a sudden you got to come home, tell your wife, I'm sorry, you got to go without me.
So you think that her expectation for that is unrealistic?
Oh, I think, well, first off, she's never been a police officer, so she doesn't know what it is to be a police officer. And, you know, unless you walk in our shoes, I don't think you have an idea of all the different shifts that we work and what we have to do to make ends meet and how hard we work.
Should we be surprised that, I mean, here's Lori Lightfoot. She hasn't been in office for half a year, and she seems to be pretty popular right now. It's a shame that with the new administration, she and maybe the most important department in the city aren't getting along very well.
Well, I know that's basically up to her. I mean, from day one, she excluded us. She wouldn't let us in. And, you know, that's on her, not on us. We're there to talk whenever she wants to talk. But it has to be a fair, you know, we have to have a fair agenda where we could sit and talk down and speak what we need to talk about and be honest about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to build a bridge here. So what's the number one thing maybe that you want from Lori Lightfoot's team? I mean, she's got 10 points and you guys have your grievances, but if she reached out to you with one olive branch, what would it be?
You know, that's a hard question to answer. I really don't know. I'd have to sit down and think about exactly, you know, we need a contract, okay? We need fair testing. The testing for promotion in this department is probably the worst in the country.
Why?
Because of lawsuits. We have a 30% merit. You know, we've also had, not within the last 30 years, which I've been on this job, we've had people on this job that have access to that test prior to that test being given. And that's got to stop.
Who is that? Are you talking about minority hires?
Well, no. 30% meritorious was supposed to be for police officers who are great policemen that couldn't score well on examinations. And now it's become a clout thing.
It's been a clout thing. I still don't understand how that works. So, in other words, if you don't do well on the test, but you've been meritorious on the job, then you get a promotion even though you didn't pass the test.
You know, on some of these tests, they lowered the pass-fail for so long at like about 52%. And what happens is it's based on who you know. It's not based on what you've done on this job. You know, there's a good chance if your uncle was the first deputy, there's probably a good chance you're going to be made meritorious. And
what's that test like?
Now, the first part is basically simple, but here's another problem. They hired Ernst & Young, and you don't get your results back. So the scores that you get might not have been the scores that you attained. Before Arthur Anderson proctored the test, the results went right back to whoever took that test. Now it goes back to the city, and they do, you know, there is no check and balances of what you scored.
So you're a little suspicious of that. Well, when I get to be king, if you take a test and you're in line for promotion as a result of the results of that test, you should find out as soon as it's scored how you did. And then you should work on whatever it was that you were deficient in on the test. That's good for everybody. But are you saying 52% is the pass-fail on that promotion test?
On most of the promotion tests that I took 5 sergeant tests, pass-fail, and I believe 3 or 4 of them was 52%.
I'm sorry, but that sounds low to me, 52%.
It's extremely low. And
so you think it should be higher? It should be more difficult to pass the test?
Well, I think you know, when you take this test in, let's say, 98, 2002, and 2006, I averaged 85% of the first part. And the second part, I averaged about a 64. So my score was lowered over 20 points from the first part to the second part. And, you know, like I said, there's no check and balances. Who knows what you scored?
Well, I would hope that the accounting firm, I mean, those are Ernst & Young. Was that the one you said?
Ernst & Young is
They seem to be a credible organization.
When you get an opportunity, Google their out-of-court settlements.
So any last, I don't know, thing you want to say? I mean, because everybody's been hearing what the mayor said about you. She said you're the clown from the FOP. Is there any last overture thing you want to say to the mayor?
Well, first off, you know, as far as what she said about me, I disregard that. The police officers that know me know I work very hard. I work very hard in what I do, and I'm here to defend the police officers that basically I take care of. That's why maybe she got a little upset, but the fact of the matter is, when a story comes out, you need to hear the whole story, not bits and pieces. You go to court, you hear the truth, not what is told sometimes in the news, but that's what needs to be happening. These guys, like I said, are hardworking, they're good people, and sometimes they're portrayed the opposite.
Yeah. Okay. This last line here, Jay? National FOP is asking Lori Lightfoot to apologize right now. The National Fraternal Order of Police is asking Lori Lightfoot to apologize right now, meaning that what she has done so far isn't sufficient. I don't know. Do you agree with that?
Well, I know the national president, and I understand it, but is she going to apologize because she absolutely believes that she did the wrong thing, or is she going to apologize because this is the politically correct thing to do, or you know, if that's all she feels, I don't want an apology.
Well, that's fair enough. I don't think anybody needs to kick this can down the road any further. Let's just let this go, and let's have the police do the best job they can, and let's have the mayor's office work with the police, because this is just silly. We shouldn't let the work of the police or the mayor's office devolve because of some name she called you and because some of a apology that didn't seem to be sincere. We're all adults here. Let's just forget that and move forward and do our jobs.
I don't have a problem with that. Like I said, we should be working together, not arguing. I agree 100% on that.
Thanks for coming into our studio, Patrick Murray.
Thank you.
First Vice President, Fraternal Order of Police, City of Chicago. Into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We'll say hello to Rowan Anna, too. That's all coming up.